So the Old Testament is filled with various categories of literature. There is history, books about history of the people of Israel. There is poetry, like the Psalms. There is wisdom literature, like Ecclesiastes and Proverbs. But certainly one of the most dominant categories of literature in the Old Testament is the works of the prophets. The works of the prophets. And we know many of the prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Hosea, Micah, we know from that famous verse, which is our church theme this year. One prophet from which Karen will read today is the prophet Amos. Prophet Amos. Now, Amos was perhaps, can be said to be maybe the angriest of the prophets. Prophets as a general category, their role was to, they were sent by God, allegedly sent by God, to tell the people of Israel of God's displeasure with what was going on in the world. And so they would give voice to God's displeasure with how the people of Israel were treating people who were marginalized, seemed to be less than, the poor, women, the outcast, the foreigner. So the prophet's job was to come and, again, give God's displeasure to the people of Israel. Amos perhaps did that in the most dramatic and startling way. He was pretty sharp with his tongue. In fact, the lion is often the image used to describe Amos, a big roar coming out of the prophet Amos. I learned about Amos from my Old Testament professor. I confess it was about 40 years ago at Yale Divinity School. His name was Brevard Childs, and his picture is on the front of the bulletin. He's the black and white photo. That's Brevard Childs. And I actually looked him up in Wikipedia, and it actually, the opening line was, one of the most influential biblical scholars of the 20th century. Whoa, I didn't know if I knew that when I was taking Introduction to Old Testament. For every way that Amos was this angry man, Brevard Childs, I don't know if you can tell from the picture, was very gentle, professorial, even soft-spoken. And the Intro to Old Testament was in a lecture hall for about 100 people, and there we were, 100 of us, learning from this truly brilliant man. Word has it was that he knew 10 languages, 5 live languages, and 5 dead languages. Wow. Prayer didn't always begin our classes at seminary. Sometimes they would. But Mr. Childs would have a little tiny spiral notebook, and he would give a 2 or 3 sentence prayer that would literally leave us speechless. Just in a few short sentences, he captured the faith. And then there was one lecture, which I can remember to this day, when he was talking about the prophets. We all had our heads down, madly trying to write every word that this man said. And then all of a sudden, there was silence. So we all began to look up. He was up on a table, taller than this one. I didn't dare get one taller than this one. Here he was on this table, this elegant Christian gentleman. He's pointing at the blackboard, at this word, tzedakah, tzedakah. Never, ever forget this word. It's at the heart of the biblical teaching. Tzedakah means justice. Justice. It's often translated as charity. It can include that. But it's much deeper than that in the Hebrew translation. It's an obligation. It's not something that we get to consider or ponder for our lives. It is an obligation from God. It is what God requires of us as people of faith. Let us now listen to the words of Amos.
The passage that David is referring to is from the 5th chapter of Amos, verses 18 to 24. Alas for you who desire the day of the Lord. Why do you want the day of the Lord? It is darkness, not light, as if someone fled from a lion and was met by a bear, or went into the house and rested a hand against the wall and was bitten by a snake. Is not the day of the Lord darkness, not light? and gloom with no brightness in it? I despise your festivals, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offer me your burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. And the offerings of well-being of your fatted animals, I will not look upon. Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the melody of your harps. But let justice roll down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. May God bless the understanding of this passage.
Thanks be to God.
Patience, a noble virtue, wouldn't you say? How many of you try to be patient in your daily life? A few shaking heads. How many of you find yourself sometimes being a little impatient? Yeah. Like the rest of you, I strive on a good day to be patient, but I have a confession for you this morning. Lately, I have found myself getting more than just a little bit impatient with how things are unfolding in our nation and in our world. And as we've learned from the scripture that Karen has read, the prophet Amos seems to have lost his patience with what was going on in Israel. Amos seems to have had what I would call a holy impatience with the injustice that God was witnessing. So Amos gave voice to God's displeasure when he proclaimed, "I despise your festivals, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. You offer me your burnt offerings and grain offerings, but I will not accept them. Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the melody of your harps, but let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream." Okay, then. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King would have turned 89 tomorrow if he had not been assassinated on April 4th, 1968. So this April, our nation will be marking the 50th anniversary of his death in Memphis, Tennessee. Some of us here are old enough to remember exactly where we were and what we were doing when he was assassinated. I heard the news on a Thursday night with the senior high fellowship at my church in Worcester, making banners for Palm Sunday for a procession through the city. And this year, our senior high fellowship will be in Memphis in the week following that anniversary day. Well, this modern day prophet, Martin Luther King, also had a holy impatience with the injustice that he witnessed, but not only racial injustice, he also spoke out against economic injustice for black and for white. And as we know, his writings, his speeches, his sermons are a treasure trove for people of faith. The selection that I've chosen to share with you, there were so many to choose from, the one that seemed appropriate for today is from his sermon titled, "The Drum Major Instinct." It was delivered on February 4th, exactly 2 months to the day before his death, and it was his very last sermon, and it captures his vision of what the life of an ordinary Christian should be about. I think his words can still truly inspire us for these difficult times. If any of you are around when I have to meet my day, I don't want a long funeral. And if you get somebody to deliver the eulogy, tell them not to talk too long. And every now and then I wonder what I want them to say. Tell them not to mention that I won the Nobel Peace Prize. That isn't important. Tell them not to mention that I have 300 or 400 other awards. That's not important. I'd like somebody to mention that Martin Luther King Jr. tried to give his life serving others. I'd like for somebody to say that Martin Luther King tried to love somebody. I want you to be able to say that I did try to feed the hungry. And I want you to be able to say that I did try in my life to clothe those who were naked. I want you to say on that day that I did try in my life to visit those who were in prison. I want you to say that I tried to help somebody as I passed along, tried to cheer somebody with a word or a song. Yes, if you want to say that I was a drum major, say that I was a drum major for justice. Say that I was a drum major for peace. I just want to leave a committed life behind. Friends, a committed, caring, and loving life is not only what each of us here strives to do day in and day out, but it is, in my humble opinion, the very best antidote to those feelings of hopelessness and sometimes helplessness when we are dumbstruck, confounded, or even sickened by the direction of our nation or our world. And Joshua Hershkowitz led such a life until his death, a committed life, until his death, ironically, just this past Christmas Day. It was at the age of 92 in Brooklyn, New York. Joshua Hershkowitz, known simply as Mr. H, years ago became so concerned that his indigent neighbors would go hungry on the Sabbath that he founded a kosher Meals on Wheels program, which has been imitated by Jewish communities around this world. It was 40 years ago that Mr. H became aware that a neighbor was struggling to put food on the table, and reasoning that there might be others like him, Mr. H, a postal clerk, began to prepare meals out of his kitchen in Brooklyn. He and his friends began to gather the ingredients of a traditional Sabbath meal, and then they dropped off these packages of food from the back of their station wagons when they heard of people who were wanting. From this improvised start, Mr. H built an organization that now each week distributes meals to over 600 families in the Borough Park area of Brooklyn, as well as meals on Jewish holidays. Mr. H was born in 1925 in an impoverished little village in Hungary. And it was Mr. H's experience in World War II, surviving the meager rations of bread and soup at the Dachau concentration camp, that led to his desire to make sure people had food. And so this immigrant, this poor refugee, this poor foreigner from a far-off land, made his way to the United States because of our nation's rich history of opening its doors to the people who are poor and downtrodden. It was interesting to read Mr. H's obituary in the New York Times a few weeks ago, and it talked about how his Meals on Wheels program is a testament to the value that an observant Jew places on the concept of tzedakah. That word was in the obituary. Throughout his life, Mr. H resisted efforts to honor his work, even rejecting the prestigious honor for a layperson to recite a blessing at the end of a Torah service. When a synagogue representative asked him if he would recite that blessing, Mr. H replied, "I'm sorry, I'm just a plain Jew." Plain Jew, plain Christian, plain Muslim, doesn't matter. We all are called to have that drum major instinct, that instinct for tzedakah. Another man with that instinct is Juan Carlos Hernandez in the town of West Frankfort, Illinois, population 8,000, a typical Midwestern town, fairly traditional, apparently fairly conservative. Well, Carlos manages a local restaurant there, and he is beloved. The town mayor calls Carlos a great asset, and he says he doesn't care for anything in return. The fire chief describes Carlos as a man of great character. In his restaurant, Carlos always asks after people's family members by their name. He donates scholarships to the local high school, and he hosts fundraisers to support local police officers. Friends, our nation wants to deport Carlos. In letters to the immigration court, which will decide whether Carlos is deported or not, influential residents of West Frankfort have raved about this man, someone most people in this mostly white coal mining town had not realized had lived there for over 20 years without the proper papers. Another community leader said of Carlos, "This is the kind of person who helped our country become what it is. God bless your family. God bless you. Stay strong. We are praying and rooting for you." Carlos and his wife Elizabeth have three young sons. Carlos was humbled when he heard about the avalanche of support for him, but he was also a little uncomfortable because he wasn't ever thinking that his acts of charity would ever become public. Juan Carlos has the drum major instinct. My question for all of us this morning, do we ever feel a little hopeless and maybe helpless when we see the hatred, the bitterness, the ugliness that seems to be winning the day? Or do we ever feel helpless in the face of ignorance, racism, bigotry, and the world's injustice, especially against children? Don't feel helpless. Don't feel hopeless. Let me remind you of the words of Gandhi. Remember that all through history, the ways of truth and love have always won. There have been tyrants, and for a time they often seem invincible. But in the end, they always fall. Think of it, always. By our actions, by our kindness, we can say no to the mean-spirited rhetoric, to the ugly and divisive spirit we sometimes see in our nation and in our world. You see, what we do makes a difference. What we do matters. And we can and we will change the spirit of this great nation and the spirit of this beautiful world. So I conclude with every smile to a store clerk this week, with every person we let in that line of traffic, love wins. With every caring phone call or note or card, love wins. With every prayer shawl knitted, with every canned good brought in, with every paper product for Carol's closet, love wins. With every casserole or cupcake made for Hands on Hartford, love wins. With every trip to Back Bay Mission in Biloxi, love wins. With every hug we give to someone this morning, with every friendly handshake, love wins. With every march or demonstration in protest of injustice, love wins. With every letter to an elected official demanding justice for the poorest among us, for the widow, the orphan, the marginalized, the foreigner, love wins. Each and every day, we can be drum majors for justice. We can be drum majors for kindness. We can be drum majors for human decency. And each of us here can be drum majors for love. And it is guaranteed we will win. Amen.